A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello and welcome to the Run As Well podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're speaking with Laura Fountain about how to run your perfect marathon.
Perfect.
I mean, it's a big claim, isn't it?
It's huge, bold. Clickbait podcast. So, it's incredibly good information, useful, applicable information about marathon running.
Taking some of the stress out of the race week, principally.
Yes. And just generally trying to enjoy the day, be it target-based or pleasure-based.
Love that.
Yeah, there we go. Hey, Rick, you got any news?
Oh, I ran the London Landmarks yesterday.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, it was good, actually.
It's a great race.
It's a good race.
We both did it last year. You and Ali actually represented this year.
That's right,
For Team RW. And you got marginally quicker.
I did one of these things. I think that listeners will sympathise with this, where it's not like you haven't been targeting the race for ages. Like, if you're someone who races like multiple times a year, but you find yourself there and then you start lying to yourself that you're not going to try. I was like, I did the Orion a couple of weeks ago. Like, I'm not ready to try.
Yeah.
But then you're not prepared to say,
as you like, lace up the expensive super shoes.
Yeah, I was in a pair of like the new ASICS super shoes. And I was like, I'll start off. And then I found myself trying.
This is
the worst of all scenarios here, where you say you're not trying, then you start trying, then you resent the fact you're trying. But at that point, you're too far into the race where you're like, I can't just start walking.
You're essentially running on spite here. Self-loathing.
I was like, you'd be much better just saying, no, I'm going to try. I don't expect to get a PB, but I'm going to be honest with myself and say, I'm going to try. And for that reason, it's going to be relatively like hard work.
Yeah.
It's so much better than sort of pretending that you're not trying, and then you find yourself trying anyway.
Just such a real insight. I mean, I've been there myself, but you just no one else is bothered.
No one else cares.
No one else cares. I'm not even bothering right now. I'm really trying. Yeah. Oh, God, I hate myself for trying.
And then do you do this as well, where you start making these like little pathetic kind of like deals with yourself that you'll never keep? So I was like, look, try to 10 miles then. Try to 10 miles. Okay. And then the 3 miles, for me personally, I was trying to run under 1:30. So I was like, I could see that I was ahead of that. And I thought, like, at 10 miles, I could probably like jog and still finish around 1:30.
Yeah.
And then it becomes, to get to 11 miles then, and then 12 miles. And then actually at 12 miles, I did sort of ease off a bit.
Yeah, we had to, you know.
I was absolutely knackered and furious at that point, Ben. Anyway, so just, it'd be interesting. I think I'm sure I'm not the alone making those sort of deals. But I did think better to either do races and just be honest with yourself about what you're going to try and do.
Well, Laura brings this up in our chat later about what you're, and being honest with yourself and sort of setting a goal and sticking to it. And maybe you should have spoken to Laura before.
I should have had some kind of coaching beforehand. So
descent into absolute self-loathing over 13.1 miles.
So that was me. That was my weekend anyway. So
that sounds good, mate. I'm glad that you did run well. Well done.
Hey, talking about good running.
Yeah.
Russ Cook, a.k.a. the hardest geezer. Another huge claim, because there were some pretty hard geezers around. Do you know what I mean?
For not in the running world.
Yeah, true. But in running terms, he's unbelievably tough. He's run the full length of Africa from south to north. And it took him the best part of a year, 16,000 kilometres. And he finished on Sunday. So congratulations to Russ. What an amazing achievement. Yeah, it's huge, isn't it? It's like and I think there's lots of, like, say running across the States, obviously, is very difficult as well. It's not as far. But I think the logistical challenges of running across Africa are numerous as well. So I think actually, I think that's why so few people have actually...
Well, we were looking at it, and we were talking about running across or down or up and down different countries. And obviously, if you choose a smaller width of an area or...
Yeah, sure.
I ran across New Zealand, but you'd like, you know...
Yeah, right. That's
pretty easy. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of... The route he's taken is very much like... the most northerly point to the southerly point.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're right, if you look at Africa, you could say, well, I ran the width of Africa. You ran across South Africa.
Yeah.
It's like, so it's kind of...
Yeah, and it does, yeah. So congratulations to him, because that is an incredible thing.
Do you know, there's also a runner called Dio Cato, who's currently running.
Yes.
So it's like, they're like buses, these things. You know, you wait decades for someone to run the length of Africa, and suddenly two come along at once. And he is running all the way, and then he's running home.
Yeah,
which is pretty
just one up in it straight away. One up in him. Yeah. Oh, what's that? You didn't run home? Wow, sorry about that, mate.
There you go. Yeah, so some pretty impressive stuff.
Amazing stuff. And I'm sure both raising lots of money for charity and sort of things.
Yeah,
like
Russ
that.
Raised a huge amount, didn't he? £500,000, I think.
It's incredible. So, you know, congratulations to both of them.
Agreed.
As Deo continues.
Yeah, exactly. Right, I think we should probably get on our guest of the week.
Yes, let's do it.
Guest of the week, here in the studio. Guest of the week, sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete, could be a physio, or a complete unknown.
Thanks very much, Laura, for making the time to chat with us on the Runners World podcast. Lovely to have you back on.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
You're training for the Boston Marathon, we hear.
The original Boston in Lincolnshire.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
Good course.
Yes, I'm trying. It looks good. I spoke to the partner of someone who won it previously, and it's his favourite. And I thought, well, if I'd ever won a marathon, it probably would rank as my favourite race. But that's an endorsement. It's very flat, so we're just hoping it's not going to be a windy day.
I love
this
that.
Is great.
Yeah, I'd like to have a go. I'm probably not going to get into the other Boston anytime soon.
Absolutely not.
So there you go.
Now, I'm going to blame Rick for the title of this title of this podcast, because he said how to run your perfect marathon.
It's a huge promise, isn't it?
Huge, vastly overinflated. But the most important thing, I think, is just covering off those key aspects of like the final stages before the marathon, building up to race day itself, and how to, as a coach, Laura, how you best tell your athletes to deal with that day, not necessarily from like the people running their first marathon, but even just those who've done it countless times. There's those nuanced little tricks that can make the day just better. I think that to start with, how do you best approach taking the stress out of that race week build up?
Well, I myself am a bit of a racezilla when it comes to marathons, and I know that my stress does come external, and it's not always pleasant for people around me, but I know that about myself. So I try and do things that calm me and also take me away from situations where I'm going to be a bit ratty. So a lot of that is planning and having lists, but being clear with your family and friends, I think. So we as runners, and if you're doing a marathon, you've probably become a little bit, to say the least, obsessive about running and marathons and all of that. And it's difficult. It's easy to forget that not everyone knows what happens on a marathon race day. So your friends and family are probably wanting to come and be supportive and cheer you on and all of this stuff, but they've not done it before. They don't know what to expect or what's going to be best for you. So if you can think about where you want them to be, what you want them to be doing, maybe in the week before, get the details of the race, share with them. You know, not everyone even knows that it's 26 miles. We've all been asked, oh, how far is your marathon? Well, it's 26.2 miles. Hopefully they've measured it, and it will be. So maybe a little fact file. Lots of websites for races have supporter information. Steer them to that and give them that information so they don't have to ask you questions, because I get a bit ratty in that last 48 hours, I'd say. So if you don't want people to be asking you last minute when you're trying to pin your top your number to your top and that sort of thing, to be going, oh, so
are we going to see you at mile 12? Do we think mile 12 was going to be the best place?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah, exactly that.
So get all that sorted as soon as you can. Tell them what you want. They might do it, they might not, but they don't know what you want them to do unless you tell them.
That's good. We often hear this term around this time of year called maranoia.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are suffering from. It's not a medical definition, is it? But it's kind of, what about stuff like, you know, starting to think that you're
getting
something's
cold.
Gone wrong. I've got a cold, or I've got some sort of phantom injury. Have you experienced that yourself? And have you got any advice?
I have. I remember that before Manchester in 2019, we went to go and have food, and then the evening before, and I had this pain in my back which I'd never had before. And I was like, oh my God, where's this come from? What is it? Oh, my race is over. Everything's ruined. When I woke up the next day, it was gone. So I don't know what happened there. Maybe it was the long train journey or something, but it went. And we've all had those creaky feelings in our legs, but magically race morning, everything's perfect.
Something happens, yeah.
Something does happen.
Yeah.
So don't rule yourself out until race morning once you've started.
Yeah, that's good.
This was my question, because I think that before we get into talking about the best race you can possibly do in the preparation, you can always, that there might be some people listening who their build-up has been very bad and
I shouldn't laugh, sure, it's not funny.
And they might be creeping slowly towards the start feeling utterly panicked,
unprepared
by this prospect. As a coach, like, when, and I'm going to say it, when should people not start? Like, what is the DNS on this? Because it's like a lot of people will just force themselves through that race and it'd be terrible and never do it, want to do it again. When, as you say, do you leave it up to race morning? If you've been chronically injured the whole time, should you just know already that you're not doing it? What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think if there's been like an injury that's disrupted your training, hopefully you've seen a physio or somebody who can advise you on that. A lot of people, I think, if they're, I'm only going to do one marathon, I've done all this training, they approach it as though if they don't do the race, the training is wasted.
Mm.
Now, no training is ever wasted, because ultimately we're not here to win races. We're here, the race is the goal, but we're doing this for our health. Any run that you've done has been good for your health. You've got out, you've got active, you've got fitter. You might not do the race at the end of it, but that training has not gone to waste. It's not been put to use on a race course, but it is still benefiting you as a person. It is really difficult, because I think sometimes you don't want to have to go through that training again, but there's time. It might be that you could, we're lucky to have lots of races in the UK now, and the marathon race season spreads from the start of April to the end of May, really.
Mm.
So you could buy yourself an extra 6 weeks if you found a race that's later on, which I've done previously. I was supposed to be doing London, training was disrupted, I ended up in Edinburgh and had a great race. So there are lots of options
That is good, yeah. That's good. I think you can end up thinking it's all or nothing on this. And when you get into London, obviously there's an aspect of that, because you're like, I'm so lucky to get in.
Yeah.
But there are other great races out there where you can still get in. You don't need to, like, it's not like getting a Taylor Swift ticket, Ben.
And London does have a great deferral policy.
Yes.
Yeah, it's true. There you go.
That's true.
All right, well, that was me bringing it down to the DNS. We can let's lift it, elevate this back up into the perfect marathon.
How about does this take the stress out of it if you're like, I've got an A goal, but I've also got a B and a C goal? Is that something, that sounded like a C goal, didn't it? You don't want to bring that along.
Don't do that.
Maybe the Brighton Marathon. Is it worth? Do you think that's a sensible strategy to have these kind of different goals to kind of take into account that your race might not go as well as you might hope?
Yeah, I think yes and no about that, because I do think if it's your first marathon, then I would kind of, instead of going ABC, I'd kind of go from the ground up. So instead of top down, ground up, to say, what do I want to ultimately achieve in this? What would I be happy with? And most people will say, I'll be happy with getting to the finish, enjoying the day.
Yeah.
Great. Then on top of that, what sort of time might you be looking for to be chuffed with? And then what would make you think, oh my God, I'm ecstatic with that. Now, often the conflict comes between wanting to enjoy the experience and wanting a certain time. You often can't have both. If you're pushing to your limit, you're not going to be enjoying those last few miles, certainly, probably more. So thinking about it in that aspect, I think if you're somebody who has run a few marathons and you're going for a time goal that is going to stretch you, sometimes you can be kidding yourself to go A, B and C. I know, for example, Rick, when you were aiming for sub 3, that was like...
That was it.
On a knife edge, wasn't it? It was going to be all or nothing. So I think sometimes you've got to just commit and go, this is my time goal and I might make it, I might not. And if I don't, that's okay. That's a possibility. And make peace with the fact that that's a possibility and think, well, any day that you get to run a marathon is a good day.
Yeah.
But the only time on the clock that you're going to be happy with is this one. If you're honest with yourself,
yeah, I think that's a good
that
point.
That being a C and not, and you've got to commit and go all in for that main goal.
Yeah, I mean that's true.
Yeah, otherwise you'd probably bail out sooner than you would hold on.
Maybe it gives you an easy out, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'll just go for plan B.
And also, like, if you're like, look, plan B is going to be such a disappointment for me. If I'd run, say, like 3:01, I wouldn't be like, 3:01,
though. Nailed that plan
Nailed
B.
That. Yeah. It brings you very little solace at that point, doesn't it? You've run loads of marathons now, Laura. Like, when something's gone really well or something's gone badly, like, what are there any lessons that you've taken out of that and you're like, I can now see why those things happened?
Yeah, I think, so my perfect marathon, I would say, in terms of performance so far was 2016 in Edinburgh. I ran 3:30, which had been my goal. In coming up to my next marathon, I've been thinking about that, and I looked back on my Strava log from back then in that build-up as well. And I guess what I take away from that is that I had 2 weeks out with... I ended up actually being in the back of an ambulance, taken into A&E because I wasn't very well, and I had 2 weeks of missed training, which I'd not, I'd forgotten about how long that was until I look back on the records and think, oh, okay. So no build-up is ever perfect, and it would be easy when you get to this stage towards the end of a race to focus on the bits that you didn't do. Actually, other than those 2 weeks, my training was very consistent. I did my runs each week, did a good amount of long runs. And so those 2 weeks didn't really make that much difference. So if you're in that position, try and not obsess over the bits that you didn't do. And what you do consistently is more important than the week or two that you've missed or the odd long run that you've missed. The other thing I would say is that was quite a warm race. I've done Edinburgh 2 times, and both times it's been a lot warmer in Edinburgh than I've expected.
Yeah.
A lot of people after the race were saying how hot it was and this and that. I didn't in the race think it was too hot. And I think that there is a certain amount of letting it into your mind. So obviously, if it is going to be a really warm day, be sensible and adjust your expectations and adjust your strategy. But there is a element of there's the physical effects that weather can have on you, and there's the mental effect. And if you've dealt with the physical, you've adjusted your pace maybe, or your time goal, or your hydration strategy. Don't let the mental aspect of the weather affect you, because I put on a cap, put on some sunglasses, and I try to forget that it's a warm sunny day, because I'm a ginger person. We're not typically good at dealing with that, but it didn't, if you let it in and you start to think, okay, my race is ruined, this is going to be really hard, then it has already beat you before you start.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
How about the kind of race itself, Laura? Do you think that the even splits approach to marathon running is the way to run your perfect marathon?
I do. Unless you've got... I've never run Boston, Massachusetts. It's a bit hilly. I've only tended to run, well, I say that, I've run Snowdonia, which was a bit hilly.
Relatively hilly, that, isn't it? Yeah.
But in terms of when I've been aiming for a certain pace and a certain time, I've gone to Manchester and gone for nice flat courses that makes it simple. And I think a lot of runners get caught up in this idea of the negative split is the way to do it. And obviously the pros would approach it in a negative split. It's very difficult to do. But when we talk about a negative split for the pros, they're talking like it's marginal, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like
yeah.
seconds difference. It's not running your second half like
20 minutes faster. Yeah.
But the reality is you probably get carried away in the first couple of miles, particularly if you're somewhere like London and you the excitement of it. And there's a first couple of downhill miles and you will end up probably with a positive split. But aim to go even splits, because that's you mentally get tired during the race as well. If you just have that one number in your mind of what you want each mile to be, it's a lot easier to deal with than thinking about any negative split strategy.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think negative split is like it's like an elite level racing strategy that you can use to like break the field. Mm. Do you mean like mile 20? I threw the hammer down and did a 4:30 mile. It's not particularly applicable to like the kind of marathon running I'm doing.
Yeah, but you got your sub 3 on a positive.
Yeah, I think most people do slightly.
Yeah.
So I went through in. I think I was very close to getting a bit too far. I think I went through in 1:27:30, and then finished in 2:58:30. So I got slower, but I had something. I like the idea that you've got something to defend in the final few hours. Do you mean a bit like I've invested a lot here? Like, if I give up now, rather than like if I'd started slow and I was just with the flag, then you've got nowhere to go, have you?
Yeah, it's true.
So, but having said that, a lot of people who pace themselves better came past me over the last 2 miles. So it wasn't the perfect marathon, but I think the data does support the idea that most people will running an ever so slightly positive split is probably how to run your PB.
I think physiologically that makes total sense. Like,
yeah,
as you say, physical and mental fatigue kick in, and there's not much you can. If the training's gone right and everything's on point, nutrition's good, hydration, you're still going to have essentially fatigue.
And
that's quite difficult to go, no, I'll ignore that.
Yeah. I'm going to get quick here. Have you ever really mucked it up with a marathon, Laura? And if you have, like, what did you learn?
I've mucked it up a few times. I have dropped out of Bournemouth 1 year, where I'd gone in with a bit of a niggle, and that was where I was aiming to run 3:30 the first time. And got halfway and thought, this is not going to happen. So I knew I had that niggle, so I dropped out. I tried to think, what would a professional athlete do? If they knew they weren't going to get the result they wanted, you know, we know why the London Marathon Elite Hotel is at halfway, because they all drop out there and go and have their shower. So I wanted to stop the niggle from getting worse, and I dropped out. And it felt bad, but actually it was the right thing to do. In Manchester 2019, I was trying, I was trying to get a Boston qualifier ultimately. Didn't admit it, but that was what I was aiming for. And just wasn't in the shape to do that. So when I kind of ground to a halt at mile 20, and that was really hard work. I had a massive drink of water, walked for probably 3 miles, and then started running again. So it wasn't over. I got better. I got a bit of hydration in, had a gel, and had a bit of a walk, and then I found I could run again, and actually ran in good enough pace. And then I think I did get a good for age time, although didn't get good for age acceptance from that result, because I had that number in my mind and thought, oh, actually, if I start running again now, I can probably get under 3:50 or 3:45, whatever my age was then. And I did, and I got to that. So that was a motivator, but that was mainly my motivator just to finish it and get it over with. Because it's very easy to feel sorry for yourself once that's happened. My first time I ran London, I had a horrible race where at mile 6, everything had already felt awful at mile 6, and that's not how it should be. And I wasn't going too fast. I was going at the right pace. But I'd been knocked off my bike a few days before, and I don't think I'd really realised how much of an impact that had had on my body, maybe. But it was my first time running London, and really I should have gone with the goal of going and enjoying it, because I'd been working towards running London since I started running, really, and I'd been rejected so many times from the ballot, and ultimately got my good for age place, and I should have gone and enjoyed it. But I'd gone with a time goal as well, and when that wasn't happening, it was difficult to go, actually, try and enjoy this, because this is what you've worked for just to be here. So going around Cutty Sark, having a look around, I ran, walked quite a bit. I remember getting handed an ice cream by somebody around mile 20. That Amazing. Was good.
Lovely.
I got handed a beer at a mile 23. That was also good. And tried to have a good experience, even though the result wasn't going to be what I wanted.
Yeah, that's like great, that. I think. Yeah. Well,
that, because I had a very similar experience with London, but I didn't have a time goal. And I want to get into the idea of a perfect marathon being just enjoying it. Because we've talked very much about time goals and like sub three and Laura and yourself qualifying for different things. But so like a perfect marathon for me was London, which I just went and did.
Yeah.
With no time goal and enjoyed the day and got a beer at like mile 22 off a couple of mates. And, you know, it was great from that point of view. I think just having that in the mix as a perfect marathon, just enjoying the experience.
Definitely.
I think that's... Laura, have you ever done one without any goals apart from just enjoying the occasion?
I have. I've run with... when I ran Snowdonia, the goal was just to get to the finish line. I ran with a friend the whole way, and we sang, possibly annoyed some people with our singing as we were singing, "She'll Be Coming Round the Mountain." And... That was the goal. And then we ran actually Dublin 2 days later. And again, the goal was to go round and enjoy it and just finish it. And running with a friend, it is a different experience to go with that. And you can cheer each other up when you're having those lulls. Because even when you're running for not for a certain time and you're running for enjoyment, there is going to be periods where it's less enjoyable, where things will start to complain. And you're there and you can kind of chivvy each other along and perk each other up a bit.
Yeah. Have you ever done a race, a perfect race, but just for pleasure? Never.
It's just
pure speed.
This is a bit different, but I was a pacer at a few
London
marathons.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was different because obviously you're running at like, well, hopefully a sustainable pace.
Yeah.
And that changed the perspective for me because it was suddenly, it wasn't about like, it wasn't a personal, like it wasn't a PB goal, but it was more like going around, hopefully having a chat with people who wanted to have a chat and kind of, I guess, like facilitating other people's marathon experience. And I actually miss doing that. I know we don't do it, might as well don't do it anymore, but I'd happily do it again because it was great and people are very thankful to you at the end. And it's like, oh, you know, you kind of feel like I haven't really done anything. I just went running. Just wore a watch and ran evenly. But so that actually, that probably beats any London Marathon experience I've had personally.
That's nice. Such a caring man, aren't you? Such a giving back.
Just giving back. So I am, and I think I should do more of that racing because I think that there's part of me that thinks I'm racing and I've got to be trying to get a PB otherwise.
Well, I mean, yeah, if you're going to put, I mean, on the count, just to counter everything I said, if you're going to put all the effort in to running a race on a certain day, you're not necessarily like Laura's approach, just went and did it like and then did another one the day after, like 2 days later. That might be the perfect approach for that, but if you are banking 4 months of training, the perfect result isn't often just like
getting around.
I mean, it is, but it's also like there'll be a time. There's got to be some sort of...
Yeah, okay.
There's going to be an effort-based achievement, isn't
there? Yeah, I think that's true as well. Yeah. Have you ever done any pacing, Laura?
I did. I was a pacer at the Great South Run 1 year. And the pacers were sponsored by a certain brand that meant I had to wear bunny ears. Oh. It wasn't Playboy. It was the batteries. So that was a fun experience. I'd never done a 10-mile race before. I actually found it quite pressured to, you're responsible for these people's races. But we were in we were in pairs, so you can kind of work together slow down and speed up as needed. But yeah, never paced a marathon. I do think I'm pleased that pacers do that. I'm very, I think I would overthink it more than if I was doing my own race. But there was when I was running Edinburgh in 2016, actually in the first mile or so, a man ran alongside me and said, oh, what time are you going for? And I said, 3:30. And he said, oh, I'm going to run with you then, I'm going for that too. And I said, actually, do you mind not? Because I wanted to run my own race. Yeah. I didn't want to be responsible for someone else's. It felt a lot of pressure that you're a stranger and I've got to spend three and a half hours talking to you. And that was too much for me at that point. So I said, actually, hope you have a good race, but I'm going to do my own thing and you do your own thing.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, okay. And I think that's another thing about being clear with what you want. If that sort of situation arises, saying, actually, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful to him that he did ask whether, did sort of say it rather than just stay with me talking. He gave me that opportunity to say no thank you. And later on in the race, I did end up running with another guy for a bit and we ran together. So I think it was that it was very early and I was like, I don't want this.
Enough. So
be clear with people around you if you're not into that or ask people, oh, do you want to run together or not? If there's not any official pacers around.
Yeah,
that does feel early. Mutual support later in the race, unsaid mutual support with other runners is very welcome. But at the beginning, to be like, hi, we're friends now, it's bold.
It's a look, isn't it? Laura, if people want to find out more about your running or coaching and stuff, where can they go?
Yeah, they can find me on Instagram. You can find me. I'm Lazy Girl Running, and you can find me on Substack, Lazy Girl Running. And I send out emails once or twice a week with some tips for your running via Substack. So find me on there.
Right. Thank you so much for your time, Lauren. Best of luck in Boston. Yeah.
Thank you. You're coming to pace me now, though, aren't you?
Yeah, I'll be pacing you. Sounds good.
Thank you, Laura.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runners World podcast. A huge thanks to our guest, Laura Fountain, and to you, of course, for listening.
You can subscribe to Runners World magazine by simply Googling Runners World UK subscription, going onto the Hearst magazine's website and subscribing to this. It has lots of launch introductory offers. If you haven't subscribed already, you can get great value on what is a phenomenal subscription. It's 12 issues a year, guys, 12 issues. And I'm pretty sure you can get that for absolute like bag of chips money. So right now, so you should just be doing that, and then also get a bag of chips because I had some the other day. Forgot how good an open bag of chips was. Really delicious. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Please subscribe to it if you haven't already, and you'll hear from us next week.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.